Thank you. Now for our flag salute, we're going to have Teresa Sasher come forward, please. She's 11 years old and an 8th grade student from North Oceano. She is a resident of Oceano. She attends St. Paul's Church in Pismo Beach. She plays handbells for the Methodist Church in San Luis Obispo, and she is leading us tonight in our flag salute.
Okay.
Teresa?
Okay. Salute. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before Teresa, you leave, I also want to tell you that she plays the trumpet, piano, and handbells. She enjoys biking, rollerblading, surfing, and being a part of the swim team. She has 3 brothers who are all grown up. Fortunate for you, huh? Teresa, if you'll come forward.
She thinks she's a good audience.
Yeah. On behalf of the city council, we'll give you this little proclamation and some treats. And after the treats, you can see our dinner.
I mean,
thank you. Thank you.
Could we have roll call, please?
Here.
Here.
Councilmember Lieberman.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Here.
Mayor Santos.
Here.
Closed session announcements on Tuesday, January 20th, 04, after the meeting. First item, conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, city manager, administrative services director, human services coordinator. Representative of the Police Officers Association. 2, conference with legal counsel pending litigation, Spooner versus the City of Grover Beach. 3, conference with labor negotiator, agency negotiator, city attorney, unrepresented employee, city manager. The council reconvened into public session. No reportable actions were taken. On items 1 and 2, the following reportable action was taken regarding the closed session. Item 3. The council approved amendments to the city manager's contract. The city council meeting was then adjourned. Ceremonial calendar. A proclamation of appreciation to Gene Gates, Volunteer of the Year, for the Citizens Assistant Team. Chief Bradbury.
Whereas the Citizens Assistance Team program was formed in December of 1999 by the Grover Beach Police Department, and whereas the members of the Citizen Assistance Team are made up of citizen volunteers who reside in Grover Beach and the surrounding communities, 3, and whereas Gene Gates has volunteered over 780 hours of time to the Grover Beach Police Department since he became a CATS member, and whereas Gene Gates was instrumental in initiating the curb painting project, wherein house numbers were painted on curbs for responding emergency personnel to clearly locate an address at any time of the day or night, and whereas the members of the CATS providing their service to the Grover Beach Police Department and the City of Grover Beach, employees of the police department would be hard-pressed to continue and maintain the superior level of service that the community of Grover Beach expects and demands, and whereas Gene Gates exemplifies this community spirit of volunteerism and is an example of successful community and police partnerships. And City Council has this proclamation for you. I present it. And if I can say something about the curb painting project. As a project last, I think it was January of last year, I was sitting in a CATS meeting. They hold a meeting once a month. And Gene came up with this idea of painting addresses on curbs. And I thought it was just one of those ongoing projects that would take years. And by the time they painted all the curbs, they'd be starting over again. Gene, along with fellow volunteer in the back, our press man on this, Preston Woods. They went out, they got the paint donated, they got the stencils purchased. Then they and the other CATS members went at this for 11 months, and they have almost completed the whole town. And I'm just amazed when you look at all the houses now, every one of them has the curb painting. If it's still an asphalt curb, they change the colors and put black with white letters or the other way around. And it was a great project and well-deserved to be Citizen of the Year.
I just wanted to say to thank the council for the proclamation. And I would like to thank the members of the CATS program for voting for me. And I want to assure them that their check is in the paper.
Thank you, Gene. Well deserved.
We're working tonight, so we have to leave.
I know you do good things. Okay, our next proclamation designating February 24th, 2004 as Spay Day USA. As mayor, you get to delegate things sometimes, so I'm delegating Steve to read the proclamation.
The Spay Day proclamation. If Yvonne Gresser could come forward. Okay, bear with me. This is a proclamation. Animal overpopulation costs the taxpayers of this country billions of dollars annually through animal control programs aimed at coping with the millions of unwanted dogs and cats. And whereas spaying and neutering cats and dogs has been shown to drastically reduce dog and cat overpopulation. Whereas veterinarians, humane societies, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens work together to ensure the spaying or neutering of more than 210,000 companion animals through Spay Day USA in 2003. And whereas veterinarians, humane societies, national and local animal protection organizations, and private citizens have joined together again to advocate the spaying and neutering of companion animals during Spay Day USA in 2004. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Grover Beach City Council that the day of Tuesday, February 24th, 2004, is designated Spay Day USA. The City Council encourages all residents to observe the day by having their own dogs or cats spayed or neutered, or by sponsoring organizations that provide these services. And I'd like to present this to you on behalf of the City Council.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I'd like to take a moment to thank everyone on behalf of Woods Humane Society. I thank the council, Mayor Santos. Woods Humane Society recognizes that we cannot handle animal overpopulation on our own, and we thank you for opening up your hearts and homes to the many animals that we have adopted out. Since 1993, Woods has ensured a policy that no animal leaves our facility into a permanent home without being altered. We have adopted out 13,000 animals in the last 10 years, and we can guarantee that that prohibits about 600,000 unwanted offspring potentially from being in our community. We're also very proud to be part of a greater organization within the county, the Animal Welfare Alliance, who learned this year that through efforts on behalf of not only animal welfare organizations but our residents, we have the fourth best rate in the entire nation for rescuing companion animals. And again, I thank many of you for supporting our organization and the many others, and for adopting pets and for spaying and neutering your own pets. It's very important. Thank you again.
Thank you. And thank you, Steve.
My pleasure.
Okay, presentation. Resolution of appreciation from the community of Oceano for services rendered immediately following the San Simeon earthquake. Mr. Verndahl.
allowing us to do this. Before I get started, I'd like to ask anyone from our staff, Barbara, and any of our citizens from Oceana that are here, would please come up and join me while I present this to the council. As everyone knows, the Oceana was hit probably the hardest with the earthquake of anyone in the five cities, and we had over 40 waterline breaks, and it would have more than overwhelmed our small staff to try to restore services to our citizens in Oceana. And even with all the help that we did get, it still took assistance offered and received from the city of Grover Beach, ably represented by Mike Ford, the City of Grover Beach's Public Works Superintendent, provided invaluable support during this extreme time of need. Now, therefore, be it resolved, determined, and ordered by the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District that the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District does hereby express its heartfelt gratitude and thanks to the City of Grover Beach and Mike Ford, the City of Grover Beach's Public Works Superintendent, for the valuable assistance rendered to the citizens of Oceano Halcyon immediately following the December 22, 2003 San Simeon earthquake. Passed and adopted by the Board of Directors of the Oceano Community Services District at its regular meeting duly held on the 14th day of January, 2004. And I believe we have our Barbara Mann here is one of our other directors, and she would like to say something along with our, along with Phil, who is our head of our water department there.
I'm here tonight representing Oceana Halcyon Advisory Committee, along with Peggy Wilson. We're on that committee, and folks coming before us are also very grateful for what Grover Beach did for us, and we love the way our two communities work together. We're here when you need something, and you're there for us when we need something, and that's what it's all about. Working together, and again, thank you so much for what you did for us.
Thank you.
I wanted to add a few words to what Vern and Barbara said. It's hard for me to express in just a few words how much the Grover Beach's Water Department's crew efforts were needed and appreciated during the afternoon and evening hours of December 22nd. Even when things are going good, as Vern said, we have a pretty small utility crew in Oceano. When the earthquake occurred, instantly the whole town of Oceano was without water and electricity. The Grover Beach Water Department crew responded within 2 hours. From my standpoint, they turned what appeared to be a completely overwhelming disaster into a manageable situation. We were faced with 40 or more water main and service line breaks, all of which we didn't know where we were or really what was broken. The Grover Beach crew jumped in and did what was needed to be done. Anywhere they saw water running out of the ground, they dug up the area and repaired the leak. They needed no direction, no supervision, and they knew what to do, and they did it. A lot of leaks had to be repaired hot, and that's a tough job. About 9 p.m., I happened by one of the leaks that were repairing on Airport Drive. There was still no electricity in the area, so it was very dark and getting cold. The guys were working with flashlights and pickup headlights. Several of the crew had on rubber boots, but the rubber boots had not done much good. Everybody was soaking wet from their heads to their toes from diving into the hole full of mud and water and doing whatever was necessary to repair the problem. It doesn't get too much tougher than that, and you should be very proud of them. Much of the beach area was without water, gas, and electricity for 2 days after the earthquake. And if it hadn't been for the assistance we received from Grover Beach and Pismo Beach, they most certainly would have been without water for an additional 2 days. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a homeowner and a property owner in Oceana, certainly Phil Davis and the crew at the OCSD walked point with your people on this. But I'd like to say I'm here not just to thank you all, but to celebrate with you. Because I think we all dodged a really big bullet on that day, and I am so very grateful. There's not very much more precious than good neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Could we have your name and address for the record, please? I'm sorry.
Peggy Wilson, Oceano. Thank you.
Longtime resident. Okay, moving on. Public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within this jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on the agenda.
John Bradbury, Chief of Police. I'm sure you've heard in the local newspaper or on TV in the last week that all of the police agencies have received locks for guns. This is a federal project through private enterprise, also the Child Safe, Project Child Safe, and it's to provide gun locks to people free of charge. So we can see if we can do something about all of the cases every year where young children are accidentally shot or killed by themselves or their friends when they were just playing with a gun. Anyway, we have about 2,000 of these locks. Glad to give them to everybody. There's a box in the back. Please, before you leave tonight, grab a lock. And I say we've got plenty of them.
If you have a gun or just
I didn't say what you could use.
She even told me I wasn't allowed to have guns.
Thank you.
Anyway, we appreciate everyone taking them so we won't have a tragedy like that in our community.
Thank you. Mr. Hayes.
Hi, Mrs. Mayor.
How are
Robert,
you?
I'm doing good. Robert Hayes, 281 South 9th Street. I just wanted to thank the police department for participating in that program. I read it in the paper a couple weeks ago. I was kind of hoping they would get in there, and I'm glad we did. I got mine in my pocket. And I'd also just like to give a report on the status of the Transient Soup Kitchen Committee, Advisory Committee. We've been meeting. I think we've had 4 meetings now, and there's encouragement coming from the Central Coast Baptist Church. The leadership there is interested in moving forward and solving some of the problems. Some good information has come to the committee. We haven't decided what to do with it yet. We still have to analyze it. But we've had representatives from EOC come down. They've showed us how they operate their soup kitchen, and I'll be going up there to kind of observe how they do it. They have some excellent rules up there that kind of mitigate some of the problems that they have. They have excellent cooperation with the local police up there. And there's still a little bit of resistance on the soup kitchen leadership to make changes, but it is slowly but surely moving forward. So that's about it. That's all I had to say.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking the time to put it together.
Thank you, Robert.
Robert, what do you have in your pocket, your gun or your gun lock?
Gun lock.
Oh, good. Okay. Just want to clarify that.
But we're inviting city council members to join the students, our student council and the students of North Oceano, and I'll leave the invitations with whomever you please.
And what time was that again?
6 a.m., March the 4th. It's going to be featured on Breakfast with Julissa on KCLY.
Oh, yes, I know her. Okay.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
All right, I can.
Thank you.
Okay. If you want to see something real funny, it's to see Mr. Scholes in one of those little chairs reading to the students. I got to follow him one time. That was real fun.
It's a highlight for me. So
yes,
I'll be there.
It's great. It's great. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to speak? Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Is anyone...
I'd like to see us pull item 6, please.
Thank you.
I'd like to pull item 7, please.
Okay. May I have a motion?
I move approval of items 4, 5 for the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Aye. Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
Okay, David. Item 6. Post amendment to the city manager's contract.
Proposed amendment to the city manager's contract. And I'm not here to discuss the actual contract. I'm just here to kind of discuss recognizing our city manager. I think sometimes we fail to recognize good people. So I'd like to take a minute and talk about Mr. Anderson and what I think is an excellent job that he's doing here in Grover Beach. And you know, we brought him from Fresno, where he was a kind of a finance man. And that's one of the main reasons we brought him here, was to help put our house in order. We were fighting a number of different battles, from lawsuits to department problems, and kind of a mismatch of inside regulations and our municipal codes. And none of this he caused. He inherited all of our problems. He's come in here. He's spent a lot of nights, weekends, out of his own time, struggling and writing and reworking our financial house and addressing a lot of the issues, like I said, that he's inherited, whether it's the lawsuits or the fire department problems or the police department, community development directors coming and going. And there's just been an ongoing onslaught. And I would like to take this opportunity to just publicly acknowledge the good job that I think Mr. Anderson is doing. And I want to make sure that everybody understands that Ron Anderson is running the city, not Ron Arnoldson. But with that, I think that we're in such dire straits in our budget. This would be kind of a time to renegotiate contracts and stuff, and we are not able to do that. We're on a tighten our belt, hold our positions type of
city management. You can put him over with the public works guys. You can put him in finance. It's like he has the answers. And so I appreciate what you do. Thank you. Okay.
We don't want to talk about the way he sails a boat, though, right?
Okay. Well, he stayed above water, so he's above the line.
We won't go there. Okay, do you want to do these individually? Okay. I need a motion for item 6, please.
I move approval of item 6 of the consent agenda.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Aye.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, we'll pull item 7, second reading and adoption of zoning ordinance amendment, adult business regulations.
Thank you. I would just like to, I just requested to have it pulled so we could vote on it separately from the rest of the consent agenda. I don't really have any discussion points.
Okay. All right.
Well, wondering if, I don't know if it would be worth it to bring staff up to just go over what in fact the ordinances we're voting on.
Or just see the amendments of what we've, the changes that we made since the ordinance came to us.
Susan Zelschuk, Assistant Community Development Director. At the last meeting, prior to closing the public hearing, you had the first reading of the ordinance and incorporated just a couple changes to that text. I was ready with the map. I thought, who knows? And that included changing the distance separation requirements from adult businesses to schools from 500 feet to 750 feet, and for parks and religious institutions from 250 feet to 500, excluding the South County Skate Park. And then under the section on issuance of permits, that all properties within 500 feet versus 300 feet be mailed a notice that an adult business would be establishing within that distance. And that was it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'd like to make a comment. I don't know if we want to have any more public comment at this point, but one of the things I would like to comment is the fact that we see obviously very few people from our community here tonight. I think I can recognize one or two people that have spoke on this item before, and the fact that there are no people from the community here to speak on this issue, I think would kind of validate my feeling that we've done a fairly nice job of bringing a ordinance before this community that it's acceptable to the community. And with that, I would move acceptance of this ordinance.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Eckhall?
No.
Councilmember Lieberman?
No.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Moving on to regular business. Proposed replacement of fire department dispatch radio. Chief Hemp?
Thank you, and good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, ladies and gentlemen who don't know who I am. I'm your interim fire chief, and I feel like a real heel coming to you asking for money after the way you just treated the city manager. But
question, I have a comment.
Okay.
Doug, I just wanted to say that I've really enjoyed the reports that you give to the city manager that gets passed on to us. They're clear and they're easy to follow, and if obviously we're trying to bring the equipment we have up to speed, and so I thank you for identifying that and bringing it to us this evening.
Thank you.
I had one question, and this is not to second guess your judgment. This is just to maybe ask a question. The next item is basically what the council's kind of been trying to do for a couple of years. We've been trying to find a way to have some kind of a JPA or to work within our communities to have a fire department that's is a department that's not only Grover Beach but Aurora Grande and Oceano, maybe even somewhat with Pismo. And if we are working towards that, are we premature by replacing a radio that maybe we would replace in a couple of months or years or something like that? I mean, it's not very expensive. I grant that $8,000 isn't a real big expense, but is it? Are we really on the dire need of replacing at this point?
Yes, it is. It is an immediate need, and your observations are well taken, understood. And I think you'll see later on. I'll bring you some information, but that radio would be necessary regardless.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I just have a question. How long will it take us to get it?
We'd have to go to bid.
Yes.
And so we could do 30 days on it. We can turn it around. I'll be checking with the administrative services director to find out what the city's requirements are, but
okay.
Quick turnaround time.
Thank you. Is there any other questions?
Please comment.
You want to do that when we bring it back?
Sure.
Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council. Steve?
I just wanted to say, this is the time for us to tighten up the belt, as Chief Hamp had mentioned, and with humor this evening. And but we can't jeopardize public safety at all. And I say this is money that we need to spend, and we need to get that radio replaced. To hear that we have a base radio in our dispatch center that's programmed by crystals is honestly frightening. So we need to get going on this.
Thank you. Is there any other?
I was just surprised that you said that it was going to be going out to bid. If it's something that is critical and could go out at any time, isn't that kind of an emergency, and you just buy one?
Mayor, perhaps I could comment on that. All we'd have to do is to get quotes, in effect. It's not bids.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Excuse me.
It was an RFP, and it was a blah, blah, blah. Thank you.
Is there any other questions?
If there's no other questions, I would move that we adopt the resolution 04-whatever it is.
I'd like to second that.
Okay. Motion by Councilmember Arnelson, second by Councilmember Lieberman. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Moving on to item 9, development of fire and life safety service options.
Yes, ma'am. Again, this is, I didn't spend a whole lot of time on history. I don't need to tell you what you already know. The department, coming in on the 24th of December and until now, we did conduct an internal audit. This report is that I'm recommending that you direct me to take a look at those alternatives. And those would include consideration of CDF services to the community. Enhancing the existing department as we know it today, and looking at a consolidation of some of the smaller communities so that we can share resources, share our people, and provide a better service, actually regionally. So I'd like to bring those back to you if you give me that direction, and it will make it as cost-effective as possible, and we'll find out what the numbers say. I can't tell you what they would be at this time, but obviously I'm certainly aware of the budget constraints and the concerns of the council, and I'll do my best to address those.
Is there any questions of staff? No. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on this item?
I'd just like to state that
Your name?
Robert Hayes, 281 South 9th Street.
Thank you.
I'm strongly against contracting. Contracting out to CDF is a cheap excuse for doing nothing. I think there's some other options that need to be explored before we even think about CDF. It's an option that should be taken off the books. There's other options that can be explored before we do that. Again, contracting out to CDF is a cheap excuse for doing nothing. And there's other benefits to this city that need to be explored before you even consider that route.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to council.
I'd just kind of like to respond to Robert's statement. I don't think CDF is cheap at all. I think it's a very expensive alternative, and I think we'll find it out. But I don't think we'll really know what our alternatives are until we really go out and see what they are. And I think that's what Chief's asking for, and I think that's what this council's asked for about 2 or 3 years. And now someone's taking the bull by the horns, and I applaud him for it.
Anyone else?
I would just like to say with Doug, with his history and his excellent reputation in the fire community around here, he's the perfect man for this job at this time. So I'm real excited about this. I think we're going to make some wise decisions that will carry a long way into the future for us. So I'm glad he's here doing this.
I can't leave you alone, Robert. No, I mean, I appreciate everything you shared, but I think for us to do the best job for our community, we have to look at all the options, and I'm sure Chief Ham's going to present us all those options, and I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
I don't have anything to add. I agree with what everyone here has said, so you know me. I'm a man of action, so let's give him that direction.
I just have a question. Have we talked with Oceano and gotten some of their feedback, or we'll be talking to them? And
I have done preliminary groundwork for this, and right now it's positive response from everybody I've spoke to.
Okay, and then everybody will have a say so in all of this.
Oh, yes,
as we come.
So. Yeah, very much so. In fact, one of the obstacles I perceived was the fact that I should not carry a proposal forth, but have them develop their concept of what it would look like, and we'll start with there and massage it out.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. What's the direction of the council?
I'd like to make a motion that we direct staff to develop.
So approved and adopted resolutions to adopt a use permit and also the environmental determination to establish a new plant nursery business located at 1750 El Camino Real. There were no issues or concerns raised, and so I'm here to answer any questions if you have any at this time.
So any questions to staff?
The only question I have is, normally, don't we do these on a consent agenda basis, or why are we second reading? Don't we usually do it on second?
At the last meeting, the council continued the public hearing. Therefore, since the public hearing wasn't closed, this was a continued public hearing item.
Yeah. Okay, this is a continued public hearing, so is there anyone out in the public that would like to speak on this item? CNN, we'll close the public hearing and bring it back to council. So there's no questions, could I have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the staff recommendations to one.
Start with three.
I was going to read all this.
Start with three.
That's good enough. I'll move the staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Okay. Motion by Council Member Ekbaum, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Scholes. Could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
Council Member Arnoldson?
Yes.
Council Member Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes. Okay, moving on. First reading of zoning ordinance tech amendment to add live work units to list of permitted uses in the light manufacturing LM zoning district, use permit, architectural approval, and environmental determination.
Thank you. The Planning Commission recommended approval of this project, which is a zoning ordinance amendment to add live-work units to the zoning ordinance list of uses in the light manufacturing zoning district. And they also recommended approval of an environmental determination and in use permit and architectural approval to the City Council. They did that on January 13th of this year. The applicant, Ron Perkins, is proposing concurrently with this a development project to establish a new live-work development. I'm going to put up a couple pictures. This is similar to a live-work ordinance that was adopted by the City Council a couple years ago, where the City Council added live-work units as a conditionally permitted use in the Coastal Industrial Commercial District. I'd like to point out a small typo that in the staff report, it says Commercial Industrial District, but abbreviates just CI. This ordinance is proposed to be very similar to that, the similar types of development standards, parking requirements, and the types of uses that are intended with this ordinance. The types of area, office, and then residential. Each of the units includes a private balcony for their own open space. But getting back to the zoning ordinance amendment, adding this to the light manufacturing district, the council needs to find that it's consistent with the light manufacturing district and the intent of it. Currently, the LM, or light manufacturing district, states that it's for sound industrial development, for small-scale manufacturing, commercial service, and other industries. It's a tongue-twisting night. Maybe I'll just slow down. And other industries that can operate away from the restricting influences of non-industrial uses while maintaining an environment free from offensive or objectionable noise, dust, odor, or other nuisances. And the types of uses typically listed in the zoning ordinance under the LM district are light manufacturing, which include, like, for instance, cabinetry making shops, furniture manufacturing, electronic assembly. There are some more intense uses also in that zoning district. So in order to find consistency with this definition, staff recommends that if you're considering this, that you require a use permit so that you can do two things. One is to find that it's consistent with the surrounding area and the character and the uses, and also that it wouldn't restrict other uses from their operations. So, for instance, if an auto painting shop were to already be in existence next to a proposed live-work development project, that might not be the most compatible neighbor, so in that case it might not be the best idea. But if it's, in this case, located near uses that are not as intense or obnoxious for any other... In this case, it's kind of hard to see in small photographs, but let's see. This is located across the street on Farrell Road. There's residences. This is the view to the west of the project site. This is the surrounding area. I believe it's right across the street. I'm not sure where this one is. This is the same side of the street, east of 1122 Farrell Road. And this is the city's corporation shop just to the east of it. So it must be the side of the corporate shop. On the southwest side of the property line, it's adjacent to Central Coast Printing, and that's a pretty innocuous most of the work's conducted inside. So I felt in this context that this project would be consistent or would be compatible with the surrounding properties. The proposed project for this applicant proposes four attached units with a total area of almost 14,000 square feet. There's four residential units, two studios, and two two-bedroom units. The site plan. Help me out here.
You can just turn over the white page. Okay. This is the site plan. Staff thought it was a reasonable request for a zoning ordinance amendment to add this type of use to the list of conditional uses, and that the proposed project would fit in with that area. And staff and the Planning Commission recommends the City Council approve this.
Is there a question?
Answer any questions.
Yes.
I had a couple. There's going to be one property owner. This is not individual condominium units.
That's
correct.
There
will be one property owner. Okay.
Right.
Who or how are you going to enforce this regulation that only the property owner or operator of that business is the resident that lives above it?
Right. That is one of the standards that the occupant
who enforces
of the shop,
it, or how
the
do you
occupant.
Do that?
Well, that would be one of the standards that it would need to comply with, and typically if they're not being followed, those would be enforced through code enforcement. I'm not sure that there's another legal means to follow that or keep track of that.
So if we ever have a code enforcement officer, they're supposed to go in there and say, are you the owner or the
if there's a
operator
complaint,
of that business?
Right. If there's a complaint that there were impacts due to occupants of the manufacturing and the residential okay. units, if there's a conflict and we had a
that
complaint.
That seems like a problem area in the future. But
could
the
you,
other one.
And the requirement, just so you're clear too, that the requirement to have it be the same owner or operator as the resident is to reduce the parking demand.
I understand that. I think that's the other problem is, one of the other problems is your covered parking spaces are the actual floor area of the business. Isn't that true?
Part of the floor area on the bottom would be.
So, I mean, if you're going to have a furniture manufacturing space. Business, you've got all your equipment and your furniture you're building down there. Well, you're not going to park your car in there because it's used. I mean, you're trying to do a dual purpose thing where they clean up their floor at night and park their car in there, and it's not going to happen. But, so that's two problems. The other one was, do you have any restrictions on what is on the ground floor, the business on the ground floor? Can you have a cabinet shop there where you're using stains and varnishes and live above it, where it's really almost a toxic smell? Or can you have a paint store down below, a bottle paint shop below, and then live above it?
There's certain uses that are proposed to be prohibited, and then some uses are also regulated by the Air Pollution Control District. For instance, fumes from certain chemicals need to have certain venting requirements. And then...
But if you vent it right up to the apartment above it, I don't care if the own owner is living there. It's
wouldn't the fire marshal have something to do with that, too, when they did their inspection, their initial inspection? It seemed like the fire marshal would say, this is an unsafe scenario, what Dave's talking about.
I imagine.
Well, I thought there'd have to be somewhere in our controls on this that say that mm-hmm. we have the right to say, you can't live above that. I don't care if you... Mm-hmm. Heck with your own safety. I mean, if you're going to make bombs downstairs, you don't want somebody living above it.
Well,
you know, I mean,
that's
a little extreme. But
there are firewall safety design features that would be required to be incorporated, mm-hmm. too, so that between the residential area and the non-residential area, but provides them a space to live in, a legal means to do that.
Okay. I'm not opposed to this. I in fact, live in a unit like this, but I think this is a way that is a benefit to a lot of people. It's just that without any kind of controls, I couldn't find it here that talk about when something is unsafe or.
Yeah. I was looking for the fire chief, hoping he could speak to that. Okay,
I can't exactly think of any real problems other than if the business downstairs is somehow toxic and fumes or whatever go up above or to the next neighbor who's only 10 feet away because you have common walls.
They would need to have proper ventilations and hood systems for different types of uses. Yeah, okay. Exactly what those are, I'm not sure. Because
I thought maybe there would be some kind of list of things that we'd recommend that do not go into this type of building.
Prohibited uses. Are recommended to include the following adult businesses.
well, that's one I think should be in the LM, so you're already messed up.
First subject, sorry. Okay. Vehicles, including automobiles, recreation, motorcycle, boats, RVs, similar vehicles, vehicle maintenance, that is, repair, auto body work, auto cleaning and detailing, painting and upholstery, because those are kind of toxic activities, storage of flammable liquids or hazardous materials beyond which is normally associated with a residential use, welding, machining, woodworking, or open flame unless appropriately separated from living quarters as determined by the building official and the compliance with the UBC and the fire codes, and then any other uses that the community development director feels are not compatible with the residential activities. So if something came before us, we'd have an opportunity during the use permit process to say, you know, that one probably wouldn't be safe or healthy or right here.
Once this is built and you have one property owner and the tenants change, how do you, they come in for a business license and you're going to review it at that time? Is there something in there that says, triggers it, somebody wants to put in a welding shop there now? And
they would need to come in for a business tax certificate, although that's not something that we would necessarily control, but they should be in compliance with the zoning ordinance.
Doesn't the fire department have to inspect it before you get it?
They do, yes.
So they would have this list.
They would probably flag it then.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Martin?
No? Exactly what Susan said. The process kicks in at the use permit application. And there are so many different uses that could be out there that would be could be contemplated with this type of a unit, that trying to develop a list specifically that identifies each one of them that is excluded would be difficult. And there are state laws that control most of the concerns that you were talking about, and state building codes and fire codes. So any kind of a use that would vary off the normal path would be evaluated at the point of application.
If no one else has anything, I'd like to add a few things I'd like to chime in. I kind of have some concerns similar to what Dave has, and I was wondering if some of those things could be actually addressed maybe in CC&Rs. I don't know if that oversteps our bounds, but maybe there are ways to put some more restraints on things in that neighborhood with CC&Rs.
We could condition it, add additional conditions of approval.
Midnight hour where they had to deliver a set of cabinets and they're working until 2 in the morning. I can see that that would be a real insult to the guy next door that's a painter, you know, I mean like a artist painter, not a house painter, who basically is very abusive to his neighbors, and he would have to listen to a table saw at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I wondered if we need to necessarily make specific hours for these businesses and maybe specific decibel levels due to the fact that they are in such close proximity. Those are a couple of questions I had as far as just trying to make this thing work the best that it can.
Sure. All uses would need to comply with the city's noise ordinance and noise element of the general plan. So in terms of decibel levels for indoor and exterior noise, they would need to comply with that. And that kind of leads you into the hours of operation, that if they're exceeding certain noise standards at certain times of the day, they could be the police department could be called to come address the situation. If you want to establish certain noise thresholds or certain activity hours, that might be tough to enforce too. We could, technically, but it might be self-regulating by the property owner or the tenants themselves.
I don't know that that's, you know, I think that that kind of puts the tenants in a situation where they're opposed to each other sometimes. I think that if the rules are a lot clearer when you go into a rental situation where you know that there's specific hours, I think it keeps the tenants from being at loggerheads with each other and being in a situation where pretty soon they just say, well, the city can't really, you know, I've called them out there 5 times, and whenever the police department shows up, my neighbor quiets down, and then they finally end up going to some kind of lawsuit or some kind of other loggerheads where I think that with this close of proximity with residential and commercial or light industrial, I think that we really need to be more specific with our guidelines.
Okay. We could, for putting something on the table for discussion purposes, establish that at a condition of approval that would prohibit
I think that the whatever type of mechanism that would be contemplated in order to address this issue would have to, again, revolve around the level of noise, because your neighbor, the painter, in your example, can work till 3 in the morning, and none of the neighbors are going to care. So putting down a time in which you can do your work would not serve his purpose. And the guy who uses a skill saw or a table saw to do his craft, or somebody who's a welder or sculptor where he bangs the metal with a hammer, we would like to control that kind of activity after a certain time of the night and up to a certain time in the morning. So however you would contemplate doing that would have to revolve, I would think, around the decibel level, which is, again, taken into account when we look at the noise ordinance.
Wouldn't you do something like when they have construction? Construction can't start before 7 o'clock in the morning.
First of all, and so we are going through the process in Tang, and we're about to recommend revisions to the noise ordinance, which are consistent with the noise element. And it seems to me that that would be a primary way to control those kinds of noises in this zone, and that it seems to me there could also be a problem with trying to do something different from that if it's inconsistent with the noise element. At least that's
is
what
the noise ordinance requiring residential interior noise levels not exceed 45 decibels.
Yes, that's what
during certain hours or period.
All times.
The only thing that they couldn't control for is noise coming from other non-residential uses surrounding it. So that would be kind of tough luck. But they could control it on their site. I think it's a good point.
Okay.
Compliance with the noise element can be added as a general condition of approval.
In just a minute.
One of the aspects of this type of a project is that it is a commercial environment with some allowances for residential occupancy. And there are some compromises and sacrifices that go along with it. For example, during the daytime, when the neighbors are conducting their craft, no, you're not going to have an environment that's the same as living somewhere in a residential district inside a home. It's just not going to happen.
Okay. Is there any other questions, Councilman? Okay, Council Member Mayor Pro Tem Scholes.
Yes. I think Council Member Ekbaum and Arnoldson brought up some very good points. I think they're certainly worthy of discussion. Maybe staff can talk about the issue of parking, because I think that is certainly an issue to tell us what is required and where they are with that. With respect to this discussion of noise and whether it's a conditional use or we limit the hours of operation, we're not talking about a typical use in an LM. You're introducing a residential element in the LM zone, which is intended for light manufacturing. So it would behoove us to look into limiting the hours of operation and any other safeguards we can have, because we are introducing an element that inherently will have a conflict. It may not be the owner of that business and the owner of that residence, but it may be his neighbor, as Councilman Arnoldson pointed out. So I think would be an easy enough exercise for staff to go down the list of uses and see what, in fact, would be in conflict, what should be allowed. I think that's one thing the director is supposedly doing under one of the conditions. So I think they do need to go to that exercise. With respect to the owner of the business needs to be living there, and obviously someone else is going to own this building, it is going to be a code enforcement nightmare, and I don't know if this is something we need to revisit as far as the standards. I don't know if that might apply to this, because obviously this project has to go by the laws that are on books now, but it's certainly, in my opinion, something we need to revisit. I mean, what happens if someone starts a business, lives there, the business is not successful? Now they have to not only lose their business, but they lose the place where they're living. So to me, there's an
inherent. And it's at the third level. And so if you have issues and concerns about the functionality of a live-work unit, then these issues that you're bringing out, we should, you know, and my recommendation would be continue the public hearing, get all the issues laid out, give staff an opportunity to address those issues as part of the ordinance and bring that back to the city council with those questions, and we can give you alternatives. I think what the city attorney has said is if we try to limit the hours of a live work unit, it may work in some situations, may be a very detriment to another situation. Depends on what kind of activity comes in there. So as the city attorney stated, we need to be a little careful as to the limitations and conditions that we put on this type of unique business living environment. And really it's designed for the person having the business living upstairs and making it less expensive to live and trying to get a small business going. And so the hours, the fumes, the separation issues, all those kind of questions, if we don't have a satisfactory answer for you, then certainly by all means continue the public hearing. Let us go back and do that research.
Okay. Councilmember Arnoldson.
I guess some of my comments are similar to what John is saying. The fact that this is it's kind of a new animal we haven't really dealt with before, maybe other communities have, but there are similar situations that I am aware of where we have condominium complexes and apartments that are so close together. And I know people that live in these complexes, and I know that 45 decibels doesn't sound like a lot, but when at 3 in the morning, when you have a real low bass that just keeps going boom, 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 it might be 20 decibels.
That's correct.
But you know what? That can be just like a drop of water hitting it can be a Chinese torture test. And that's what I'm trying to stay away from.
And I understand, and clearly understand your concern with vibration when you have close proximity mm-hmm. and adjoining properties. And maybe one of the other standards that we may incorporate in the ordinance is the vibration issue. And if we do have a piece of equipment that doesn't exceed the noise level but creates a vibration up through the walls and to the residential unit, that could be a standard that we can...
And I don't know that it's just vibration either, because like a skill saw or a router has a particular harmony within its noise that is irritating. And I love to use those things, but I know that when my neighbors sometimes use them, I go, so it is very irritating. And since this is a new animal, I really think that, you know, as I think John kind of mentioned it too, that if we do have specific hours, there are four different complexes here, four different rental units. And if someone knows the rules up front, they'll either look at it and say, it's not going to work for me. I need to work till 3 in the morning. Or they'll look at it and say, well, I agree with that. I know that I can work from 7 to 7. And, you know, that's a pretty long day as it is. So those are the rules that I accept when I rent this unit. And with that, I think there's going to be enough people out there that will rent these units that will abide by those. And in the long run, it will be more harmonious through the whole section of that whole unit.
That I'm getting to is if the noise standard for industrial and commercial is higher than residential, then normal construction of these residential units will not mitigate the noise to the 45 dBA. So has anyone looked at the proposed construction techniques to attenuate any noise that's coming from the industrial park that we are talking about bringing into this community? So I think that's something we definitely need to be taking a look at, because we're not talking about modifying residential ambient noise down 15 decibels right. with normal construction methods. We're talking about taking industrial or commercial noise and lowering it substantially.
And to answer your question, I don't know if we looked at the design to ensure that the residential units are designed to achieve the 45 dBA, but that is the standard for residential. And you're absolutely correct that we are placing residential units in the light industrial, which they do have a higher noise standard for operation. And so that certainly should be one of the criteria as part of the live-work unit criteria in the ordinance or the conditional use permit or how are we going to control that. The other issue is, and the council members raised that question too, what happens when the next business comes in? How do we control that? How do we review that? Basically, I suppose we could look at the business tax certificate as a method. However, if it's permitted in the code and we don't have any control as to yet saying yes or no, because right now what you're doing is a conditional use permit for the whole live-work unit. So we may want to consider an administrative permit process beyond after the conditional use permit is established, where we go through the checklist and say yes or no, it complies with all these standards, and if it does, then we issue it. If we do not, we disapprove it, give them the ability to appeal that decision to the Planning Commission. And that way we're continually double-checking the criteria as the City Council had identified, and that way it doesn't get so far to out of the sequence that creates the problems for the adjoining owners or the adjoining tenants and business folks. So it sounds like from the questions you're raising is that we probably would be more appropriate after you conduct your public hearing is to let's see if we can solidify all your questions and then give us an opportunity to go back and review that and come back with a response to those questions. Okay.
Is there any other questions? Steve,
Council Member
Lieberman,
okay.
Yes.
Thanks, everyone. You know, I understand everything we're trying to do here. I think that there's an element that's property owner rights related to this project, being that this is a project that's going to be owned by an individual that's going to lease the space to, for lack of a better description at this point, startup businesses. There's got to be something that the property owner has control of in the terms of the lease agreement to regulate a lot of these issues as well. Mm-hmm. To me, talking about the business that's going to go in here, this is going to be a startup business potentially, and it's going to be a person that's going to be working all hours of the night to try to make it. Right. We know what the percentages of business failures are in this country, and it's the select few.
Manufacturing zone. We're trying to make it a residential zone. We should almost have the some kind of a, any permit process, say, this is like a buyer beware thing or a renter beware. You're in a manufacturing zone. If the noise is too high, we have no control over it. Before you move in, you need to understand that somebody might be working all night next to you. You're in a manufacturing zone. You're not resident. So maybe we're going at it backwards all of a sudden.
Well, I think that maybe the better approach would be to establish a different noise standard for these type of uses, and we're not trying to get to residential.
Well, if
my largest concern is they're next to Central Coast Printing and mm-hmm. any other businesses, so when the folks who live there have a right to complain, I don't know how you cut that off. I mean, we know CC&Rs don't work unless you've got a very active group who bird dogs and watches every aspect of a development.
We want Central Coast Printing to be running all day and all night.
And they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. And we want them to be just as successful as can possibly be.
Exactly.
And it isn't fair to penalize them because somebody moves into a rental house, a boat manufacturing business.
I would agree.
And so it seems like somewhere we have to just say, beware, renter, before you move in there as a residence, you have no noise rights under the manufacturing zone requirements. So rather than trying to restrict the noise of the manufacturing, we should do the opposite.
Well, as part of the construction techniques, there are abilities to design the residential unit to achieve the 45 dBA in compliance with the noise ordinance. If you want to have a residential unit, it's more costly for the developer to do that noise design, noise attenuation design, and the construction may increase and thicker walls or more insulation, special design windows, special design vents, and that's that type of thing. That technology is there. So if you want to create the 45 dBA interior noise level, and even in an industrial zone, there's the technology to do that. It may be more costly for the developer. It may require additional studies and special designs to achieve that, but that can occur.
Well, when you have a delivery at 3 in the morning and this big roll-up door goes up and down, crashing, mm-hmm. there's no way to measure the noise of that one-time occurrence.
Yeah, single event noise occurrences can be irritating.
Yeah, just to say.
I think you'd start reducing the affordability aspect of it. The more, if you have triple glazing or whatever construction materials, you want to think about that as well, because this is to, if you make it the most expensive type of building to construct, it's going to defeat its purpose, and the rents are going to be so high for each unit. I think it would be similar to living next to a railroad line, which probably a lot of people in this community do, and you know moving into that, that you're living next to a noise source.
Well, I agree with some of that. I know that, like, the Central Coast thing, that hum might not be a big deal. It might be like a railroad thing. But look in advance, and maybe if we can, stop some of those. I mean, be as far forward think as we can and see if there are ways that we can eliminate those kind of conflicts. And if there are, this is the time to do it, not when the door's already, the horse is out of the barn. So.
When they're rolling up.
Well.
Okay. Wait a minute. Martin, did you have a comment?
The only other area that whatever contemplation and whatever direction we're headed with this is that needs to be considered is the fact that you have ongoing uses and businesses that are in this area. This is an industrial zone. If we start contemplating putting limitations, time limitations on the businesses that are coming in, immediately next door to a business that can run all night, that creates issues that may or may not be solvable. It is a buyer beware type of an environment. I don't think, again, you're talking about trying to create a residential district environment in a light manufacturing zone. And I'm not certain that it becomes affordable or it becomes reasonable to have a live-work unit. But again, these are some of the legal concerns that we would have in trying to design something that doesn't affect the ongoing businesses.
Is there any other questions? Just
yeah, I had one more question, and not to belabor this, but what happens if you have four really nice neighbors that have lived there for two or three years, and then a new neighbor moves in, and he just happens to be a night person, starts at 3 in the afternoon and works all night, and, you know, he's tuning V8s all night long. I don't think that's a buyer beware thing. I think that becomes a situation where, you know, you can't, what can you do? Well, he's living up to the noise ordinance. He's got the door shut, but it's 45 decibels. And I don't know. I think that there still is some credence for having hours on this particular animal. This is completely different than anything else.
Councilmember Schultz.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, maybe to kind of refocus what's before us this evening. I believe what's before us is, do we want to add live work units as a conditionally permitted use in the LM zone? And so I guess I do agree with the concept. I think the idea is a really good one. I think the findings that staff is suggesting are appropriate. I think the second part to all of this is, and I don't know if we can really do this tonight because it doesn't look like it's been advertised, but staff can maybe jump back in here, is to revisit the standards to which we will be applying to these live-work units. And if it means that we in the future are going to say, even though there's a residential component, the noise level for commercial is what we're going to go by. And that way, everybody's on solid footing. It does become a buyer beware situation, and I think it's one way for us to universally apply this and not treat anyone differently or anyone special. So I guess maybe we need to break this out. Do we accept these type live work units in the LM, and then do we want to give direction to revisit the standards and
come? Should come before you in the form that you would ultimately like to consider it and approve it. If the only concern is the noise, then we have mechanisms in place already which control that, as was pointed out by staff, which is the noise ordinance that's currently in place. And if somebody is in violation of that, then, you know, there are ways of dealing with that. So with that, I don't know if that answers your question. In other words, if you want us to add conditions or if you want staff to add conditions, then we should probably...
Well, I think it partially answers my question, but I think Assistant Director Zelstruck brings up a good point. And as Jake has said, if we're going to hold these units to the 45, the interior to 45 decibels, and it's in an industrial area, you are going to be stuck building block walls and a more expensive construction method that then eliminates the affordability part of this. And so I think my thought is, are we only talking about live-work units in LM? Or does tonight's meeting open up the previous standards on the book so that we can revisit them?
I think the point you're making is excellent. The question's excellent. I think that the solution probably is consistent with what Martin was talking about, is that we have a noise ordinance. We're already talking about trying to refine that, strengthen that, tighten it up. But if we look at this kind of a use as being an LM use, and everything in that district is treated the same, and so whatever the noise restrictions are for whatever is happening in that zone is what would apply, regardless of whether these have units where people live. And requiring a 45 internal non-residential zone is not necessarily what the zoning ordinance says, and I mean the noise ordinance says, and therefore folks do have, like Councilmember Eckbaum and Councilmember Lieberman are saying, it is a renter beware kind of situation. This is what the noise levels are allowed in this zone, and this is what is going to be beyond acceptable at certain times of days, because that's what the noise ordinance says for this zone.
Well, not to belabor this point, the noise element talks about residential uses, not residential zones. I think if you look at it, it identifies sensitive type uses. And I'm not going to belabor this because I don't want to get into the details. I think we just need to make a policy decision to say we're going to treat these units when they're in industrial zones that the industrial noise standard applies. Because exactly. If we don't do that, the residential uses do have to comply with the noise element, which says 45 dBA interior, 60 exterior.
In my opinion, if you do that, you're just asking for trouble down the road. If you allow 55 and 60 dBA in the residential units, no matter if they're in an industrial zone, you're just asking for problems and issues with your concept. There are techniques that can and studies to reduce the interior noise to 45 dBA. And it may be a little bit more costly for to do that than rent a separate business place in a residential unit. So there are cost savings there. But I certainly would not want to encourage us to go in a direction to let residential people be exposed to industrial. If that would be the case, my recommendation is not to approve this kind of concept, because you're just asking for trouble down the road.
And to answer your question, what's before you today is this zoning ordinance, and that's what you can take action on. As far as looking at other standards and going outside of the boundaries of this item, if that's the council's direction, that it should be given to staff, and we would re-agendize that item.
Well, why did we get these plans of this particular project if all we're looking at is a zoning ordinance?
You're looking at a development project as well. It's concurrent. Well,
that's not what he said.
But not putting the horse before the cart before the horse.
Right.
The other point, and Jake makes a good point, the other point that we need to consider that's different here on the coast than perhaps in the valley is people open their windows here, mm-hmm. where in the valley, folks this time of year aren't opening any windows and winders. I'm telling you, they don't open their windows. And in the summer, they're not opening the windows. So that may also add an additional cost of adding air conditioning to units which might otherwise not have air conditioning in order to be able to control noise when the units are too warm.
Okay. Is there any more questions of staff before I open it up for public hearing? Okay. Is there anyone? This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on this item? Everybody's running. Okay. We'll bring it back to council.
I'd just like to make one more statement. I don't mean to belittle this, but I know, and I agree completely with Jake said, but the instances I mentioned with Hoover News and with Northwest Grover Alliance, and a particular friend of mine who has an ongoing battle in her neighborhood, have brought forth the noise thing to me. So I'm sorry that I really dragged it on that long, so I apologize.
Thank you. This we're going to continue, right? Do we need to continue this public hearing to the next? Or can we move on?
I think if it's the contemplation of the council to give staff direction to begin some changes or initiate some changes into the language of this ordinance or any of the conditions, then I would recommend that the public hearing is continued and that staff be directed to return with an amended ordinance for a first reading for next week, next meeting.
I'd like more clarification on exactly what you want me to bring back, because I'm seeing differences among the council on what's important regarding noise. And I'm seeing that it's just noise that's the major issue.
Could we get a clarification? I'm sorry.
Is there a consent?
After a hard day's work, that there should be some protection in the residential unit. On the flip side is, this is a light manufacturing zone. We're having a pretty big agenda item following this meeting on this particular zone that we've identified as the industrial zone of our community. And this isn't going to appeal to someone that says, I want to go live in Grover Beach and I think I'm going to rent that apartment above the roll-up door. I mean, they're going to move into this unit for a purpose, and we need to allow them to use the purpose of the structure. Right. So I if we're looking for direction, I would say we need to treat it as a manufacturing zone, but we do need to protect the occupants in the residential portion. I don't know if anyone agrees with me or not.
Well, I think that's what Jake said a minute ago, and I agree with that. And whatever he suggests the mechanism to do that, I would go with whatever he says.
If I may, I noted three things, and the last one is the flexibility in the hours and utilization of the facility. And I think that's paramount to make these types of projects successful. Now, the first one would be the future or next business live unit. How do we review that, and how do we say yes or no? And I think there needs to be some kind of administrative permit. Mm-hmm. After the conditional use permit is issued, the conditions and the parameters of the use permit are set up for the live-work unit, and then have an administrative permit where we review the criteria to ensure they comply with the ordinance. Because if you don't have that checks and balances, the next person may come in and rent the bottom business, and somebody else is living in the upper unit, and so what you have is not the utilization of the intent of the live work unit. The second one is limiting of operation of hours. We can look at that and bring some suggestions back to you, but clearly I concur with the city attorney. Is you want to leave the flexibility for the live work unit owner and business person to succeed, and if he needs to work 12, 14 hours a day without disrupting the other units, then I think the ordinance should provide for that. And then the next one is the noise level. And as Mr. Anderson had indicated, is the valley areas in the summer and the winter keep their windows closed. And so I think what we need to do is to have a focus on the residential unit to ensure that there's some noise attenuation built into the project. And so those are like the four issues that I picked up from the city council and the dialogue that was going on here. So, and if you can think of anything else, then.
Okay.
I'll comment to that. I like all four of those suggestions. And the only reason I suggested hours to start with was a way to make sure that there was a decibel level that was appropriate at rest areas, whether, you know, so that people could at least be given a appropriate time in their life when they could rest or, but if we just, I don't really care if we have the hours, as long as we have some kind of a way to ensure that they have those decibel levels so that they can relax and they can enjoy themselves. And what you suggested with 45 sounds appropriate to me. So I agree with all four points that you made. And if we can...
February 17th. It's a Tuesday night. Okay.
Does that sound okay with everyone else?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's the motion?
Okay. Okay, the motion is?
Basically, the four steps that Jake said, and to continue it to the next meeting for a first reading. I guess it still would be a first reading. Right?
So, does everybody understand that?
Okay. Well, okay. If there's a motion on the floor, there should be a second and a vote.
Yeah, we actually, okay. Yeah.
Do we have a second?
I thought it was just direction. I'll second it. That's fine.
Okay. Let's have a roll call on that, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholz?
Yeah.
Mayor Santos?
Yes. Okay.
There's a motion to continue.
A motion to continue, yes. That's what I said at the beginning. Okay. Council committee reports? All righty. Let's go with Councilmember Lieberman.
Okay. I'm actually going to start with the Grover Beach Parks and Rec Commission meeting that was on the 22nd.
Thank you for attending.
Actually, Dee, a big part of the communication had to do with you presenting to the South County Youth Coalition.
Okay.
So I'm going to defer to you for a second.
Okay. I happened to go to the Youth Coalition with Kathy Pector, our Park and Rec person. And we spoke to the members from the Youth Coalition, and we talked about trying to get kids involved in youth and government, and talked about bringing back the Youth and Government Day here to the City Council and to start a pilot program with our city and what we used to do years past. And also, there was some a class from the Exploration Station that was teaching kids about government and how things work and how it happens. And also Bright Futures was also very interested in getting involved with this program. So I think we've got a lot of good feelers out there, and I think between all of us, we're going to get something going again with the youth and government days.
Thanks. Okay, real quick. The Blue Ribbon Committee assigned to Parks and Recreation, they say their final report's in progress. It should come to council on the 17th. McDonald's has a sign up on the Pace Building adjacent to the skate park. There was an article in the Times Press Recorder about the need for replacing the protective equipment for the kids at the skate park, and $300 was raised to do that, which is great. Some of the newer classes that they're considering, one would be first aid and CPR. And being an ex-firefighter, I would hope that all of us, whether we're employees or elected officials, are at least going to take CPR if we're not already certified.
Did they give a date on that, Steve?
No, they didn't have anything planned at this point. That was my editorial comment only. They're still working on the Cleaver property concepts, and they're waiting for more information from Clifford Clark. And an interesting thing came up. You know, all the commissions are assigned tasks to come to council meetings. And there's a certain gentleman that attends the majority of our council meetings, not to point fingers, who's on the Parks and Rec Commission, and a lot of people felt comfortable delegating. One obviously was going to be the constitutional amendment initiative to protect local city government resources to provide adequate levels of public safety. A couple of things of interest that were very educational is the city of Fresno, along with their trauma centers, looking at alternatives to dealing with drunk driving arrests and how do you deal with the repercussions and how do you get people to understand the ramifications of the crime they've committed. It was interesting that they say when you people that go to rehab, it keeps repeat offenders to 7-9%, which isn't a very successful number. They're actually considering a policy of impound. So your vehicle goes away for 30 days. And they've looked at percentages, and it's about a 50% reduction in repeat offenders. And it was a whole can of worms. What if it's a child of a family where the child's driving under the influence and the family's vehicle that's used for the parents to get mm-hmm. to and from work is impounded? And there's a lot of issues, but it was very interesting, and they're talking about doing a test program. So I think that's kind of the innovative things that you learn about by going to these. And, Chief, you probably knew these stats, but they were alarming to me about the repeat offense percentages. So those kinds of things I'll keep coming to you as needed. But, again, the thrust was on the state budget and what we're going to do. Thanks.
You know, it's funny that you said that, because Saturday at my place of business, I looked out the window. There's this little man. He was, like, trying to go into the vet's building. Thank goodness there was a thing there to hold him. And then he backed up, and he couldn't move there either. And anyway.
So what did Dave finally do then?
Came back later.
Well, Dave's going to give his report now, so maybe he can tell you.
Who had air pollution control district last year?
You.
Steve? I went to my first meeting the other day, and we adopted a strategic action plan for the next 5 years. And at the same time, we approved mover grants for the next 2 years. So I thought, you know, I'm doing pretty good in my first meeting there. The other things we did was our county's achieved attainment for the state standards of ozone from 2000 to the year through 2002. There were no violations. And by achieving attainment, we're one of three air pollution control districts in the state that have achieved attainment. So they're bragging. They think they're doing very well. So it was a very positive meeting. Another thing we did was we approved a temporary relief from district fees and regulation requirements for buildings damaged by earthquakes. If you have to replace your fireplace, you don't have to bring it up to the new standards and stuff. And all these mover grants that we approved, it was already a done deal. Recommendations have been in and everything, but I noticed that almost all of them are state money donating state funds to other state agencies. Now, this is a two-year program, so I think it's kind of set in stone now, but I'm sure going to get in the middle of that because it's the absolute wrong thing to be doing. This is supposed to be state money given to the private sector to help them improve air pollution problems.
That money comes from vehicle license fees, actually.
And branches and green waste that you can bring to them. They chip it and use it or sell it or dispose of it somehow rather than take it to the dump. So,
Arroyo Grande used to have it in their yard, and I don't know what happened to that program.
But they still do. I'm going to find out because I think that's and there was grant funding out there to replace and repair the machinery, so it's not an expense to the city. So anyway, that was my report. I did a lot.
Dave, can I just yak for a minute? When I was on there, I tried to get a mover grant through the city that would put bicycles down at the train station. And that didn't go through, but I thought that would be great. You know, you could just borrow a bicycle and bring it back. And somebody coming on the train, they could borrow a bike and bring it back to the train station. But it never went.
Heard about that in Portland or something.
Nope. Mm-hmm. No, not. It didn't hold any water compared to the buses at Hearst Castle. Yeah. They were all retrofitted.
Okay, so since you're talking now.
The only meeting that I had was the Tang group, and I just plumb forgot it. And I don't know if you made it, Dee.
No, I knew you were going.
Mr. Schultz didn't. And I asked him. I think I asked him to go there, and I don't think he made it.
Nice try.
I asked you to go there. Don't you tell me I didn't.
Is that your report, Mr.
That's it.
Arnelson?
That's it.
Mayor Pro Tem Schultz.
Well, our apologies to the Tang group for no one being in attendance. We missed the next one, right, Councilmember Arnelson? Slocox, Florida. I have a meeting on Wednesday, February 4th. As you know, the state budget crisis is doom and gloom over everyone. I mean, the group went from, I think Slocog went from programming about $15 million worth of street improvement projects down to less than $300,000. I mean, it's a substantial issue. Projects have been pushed out to 2008, and so What we're going to be considering on the 4th is the draft 2004 federal and state programs, also unmet transit needs, bikeway needs, and we'll also be considering the 2004 regional transportation plan, and so I'll bring you back more details on that later. With respect to SCAT, I know you're all familiar with the issue of the ultra-low sulfur fuel buses, and I think previously, or they're still fueling them in San Luis Obispo, but are trying to figure out a way to work with Lucia Mar School District to do them at the school property. Peg Bernard had identified possible funding sources, and so they're still exploring that as an option. Hopefully it'll come to fruition.
Well, some of the sources, funding sources for that comes from Lake Lopez, as I mentioned last time. It's through Zone 3. I think we had $12,000 or $20,000 that was going to come back to that project through Zone 3. The contractor didn't use it all up because they were supposed to, through EPA, they were supposed to retrofit some of their equipment, and their equipment was in and out of the construction site so quickly they couldn't do that. So they had that money left over, and that's going to come back for that low sulfur refueling. The Zone 3 committee, supposedly, or our advisor committee, tried to earmark it for that. So I don't know.
We accepted it back at APCD, but it went back into future improvements to air quality. I didn't earmark it.
That's so nice.
Met need. There is a foundation out there that is guaranteeing a 10% fare box ratio recovery. And so I guess what we're looking at is making the Avila trolley part of SCAT. So that's an ongoing discussion. I know Peg is a strong advocate of that. It sounds like SCAT is not using all of the TDA monies on transit needs. We have used that on streets, repairs, and improvements in the past. So I'm not certain how everyone feels about that, but I'll keep you informed on that as we go forward. And then finally, EVC, Economic Vitality Corporation. It was, again, a bunch of doom and gloom as we all sat around the room and listening to the cuts that Cal Poly and Cuesta is facing, hearing Paso Robles how they're coping with their earthquake. And so it was pretty depressing, the last meeting. The one interesting thing that did occur is that an individual came to the board and made a presentation. It looks like the PGA Tour has what we call the Nationwide Tour, which is sort of a development league for the Professional Golf Association, and they are looking at considering San Luis as a site for holding one of these prestigious events for not the PGA Tour, but the Nationwide Tour. And just for competitive purposes, the PGA Tour, they're playing for purses of $5 to $6 million. Nationwide Tour is probably playing for purses between $500,000 and $800,000. But they came and they're looking for some sponsors, are trying to raise money because they feel there's a two-year window of opportunity to bring a prestigious event to the Central Coast, which certainly would help out with renting, you know, hotel rooms and other revenue. So it's something that was presented and people are considering. So that was sort of the upbeat of the meeting. That's all I have.
Okay. Alrighty. Steve went to the Park and Rec meeting for me, and Refuge Rate Review Committee, we've never met. Of course, nobody went to Tang. And other than that, the Sanitation District. And they also wanted to know, it was approved by the board to finalize a contract for documents with OCSD's approval. The cities of Grover Beach and Rio Grande were contacted to see if they would like to participate in a joint project. Aurora Grande declined, and the city of Grover Beach has not yet decided to inspect the trunk lines. Do you know if that has been done?
We have inspected the trunk lines, we have, based on initial analysis of 4 hours or so of video tape, it does not appear that there is any significant damage that has occurred in the line, and it doesn't appear that any of the damage is recent and therefore probably not earthquake related. There are some lines that have been connected to our trunk line that may be an issue, and there are some issues where there are some repairs that do need to be made. And but the report that Mr. Wallace made with regard to that problem.
Question: Since we've done the video and we know exactly or approximately where we need to do our repairs and stuff, would it be appropriate at that time to petition the San Luis Sand District to take over our trunk lines? As Dave said, we had 5 years to do that, 5 to 7 years to do that, and at this point we're still in limbo. And I think it would behoove us to have the sanitation district take those lines over as quickly as possible. It's a real financial burden if something happens at this point. It's on our onus. And as long as we're a part of the Sand District, that should be one of the benefits of being a member there, that they take over those trunk lines. And I think we need to move on that and get that taken care of as quickly as possible.
I agree.
Okay. Then we also had to move some money to get and repair the grinder that they had. I guess it's just the company that we got it from is the one that has to repair it, and so that was done. Then also we got to see a GIS system, a video, and that was very informative. It really tells you where all the lines are and everything. And then they talked about layering and how if this would have been in place during the earthquake, we'd have known exactly where everything, all the repairs would needed to be. And other than that, those were the main items. And that we have a meeting coming up this Wednesday and stuff.
Can I ask Dave a question on the APCD thing? It kind of irritates me that the APC took the money that was set aside to mitigate air pollution control in our area for a construction project and threw it into a big pot. Now, how can they actually do that? I mean,
well,
that just
let me check in, because we accepted it. It was $14,000 some dollars, and we accepted kind of to be used for future air pollution, but it wasn't earmarked for a sulfur station in the South County.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean it won't be used out here. So
okay, but it should be in the Five Cities area. That's I kind of got the idea that it was just going to be thrown into a pot and used somewhere else, because
it just wasn't earmarked at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to city manager's agenda. None at this time. City attorney's agenda. None at this time. City council agenda. Anybody have anything to say? I just have one thing to say. Jake, I personally don't really need all these things. If you could get them in a smaller version, that would be fine. But other than that, I think I really don't need this.
What we will do is we'll review the submittal requirements that we have. We'll prepare a memo and ask the city council as to what specifically you would like to see as part of your packet coming up to you. The big plans are very costly to reproduce. If the 11 by 17s accomplish the same kind of informational sharing, that would be much less expensive to reproduce, and we have that capability of doing that in-house. So let us investigate that, and we'll come back and share with you and find out specifically what you would like to see as part of the packets.
Isn't the onus of reproducing these on the back of the pro? So I particularly like them.
What is the cost? What is the cost of a set of blueprints?
I would think about $250 a page for a blueprinter to run those for the developer.
$15-$20 per person times 8 or 9. How many were you got?
Well, then that doesn't mean that the Planning Commission couldn't turn
them
back.
They will get them.
Exactly.
Planning Commission will get them.
I'm just saying that doesn't mean that they couldn't turn them back in,
really,
and we could recycle them too. That could be. I mean, if they once they're done with them, they could turn them back in too.
Yeah, allow me to review what the submittal requirements are, see how we can reduce the cost from our side as well as the private sector side, and reutilize or recirculate the plans and see how we can do. And also, from my standpoint, 11 by 17 usually gives me a lot of information that what I look for. But you as a city council and the Planning Commission may get more involved into the architectural design than what I might. And so the bigger scales would be very beneficial for that kind of review and dialogue.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. We have council communications yet. Okay. Public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. The council will listen to all communications. I feel like Judge Judy. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on any items not on the agenda.
You've got to be about three times as rude to be Judge Judy.
John Bradbury, Chief of Police. Just to let you know, an update on Tang. You already know we talked about the possible future noise ordinance. We also spent a lot of time talking about gang boxes and future development, having gang boxes on a block to make the pickup pickup and delivery
mail
easier.
It has to do with post office.
I was going to say, you might want to explain that for the audience at home.
Large post box at maybe one or two locations on a block. So a lot of talk about that. The Code Enforcement Blue Ribbon Committee met. We spent a lot of time talking about code enforcement procedures and plans in Riverbank and in Paso Robles, and the difference between court fines and administrative fees. Very lively discussion. In fact, our next meeting will be on that topic again to see which way to go. To let you know, two-hour parking in the parking lot behind the post office, that will be enforced starting Wednesday. We'll be putting up signs warning people, and we'll also be delivering flyers to all the local businesses, just letting them know that we're going to enforce the two-hour back there. And our new
Excuse me, John, does that mean both parking lots, one and two, or just?
All the parking lots. The city signs have been
posted. Where are all the employees going to park?
Park on the street where they ought to park, probably. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The parking there is for the customers. We've received a lot of complaints, and especially with the construction on Grand Avenue.
Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why the police chief has increased that. Just tell them why you're doing it, too.
Because of Grand and the number of complaints. Evidently, there are a few people in there that just use that as a regular parking lot. And this has been going on for a number of months.
So there's no place else to park. There's very limited parking on the side streets. I park on the side street. But
I know you do.
Yeah, but, you know, I have two employees that park in that back lot, and everybody else, I mean, Trade Express has about six people, and on and on and on. It's going to be a nightmare.
And that's why I wanted to let you know, because first people that I'm sure will hear about it, I'll hear about it first, but you'll be right behind me. And
will Midstate Bank let us use their parking lot?
Special session prior to this regular meeting.
Oh, okay.
So we'll bring it back.
I had a question.
Yes.
Chief, just while you're up there, did you meet with the folks up on Newport that were talking about the stop signs? They were going to come back to the next traffic committee meeting?
The folks
Has that
on
been resolved?
No, Newport hasn't been resolved.
Okay.
We didn't have a traffic meeting in January. Letters were sent to all of those people that signed the petition that was delivered to you, telling them when the meeting would be in February. And we've been out doing surveys and watching what's going on as far as the traffic flow. And issues still seem to be there's more traffic going north and south than there is east and west on Newport.
Okay. Chief, you might want to remind the audience again about the Megan's Law, that the next meeting is going to be
on the 18th at the Ramona Center. That's a Wednesday, and we'll have people here, experts on the Megan's Law, plus we'll have the CD-ROM that tells you who the registered sex offenders are.
And just to let people know, there's another registered sex offender right off 16th Street.
Mm-hmm. We put out the word on that along with the flyer that went out on that gentleman we had on the back this upcoming Megan's Law.
And it's right close to a daycare center.
Good.
Okay, anybody else in the audience wants to speak? Okay, we'll move on to council communications. I think Mr. Scholes, you had.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm sure we all saw in the city manager's Friday letter the correspondence on this SB 744 done. It's a bill in which what it does is it will give the HCD authority to overturn local land use decisions after hearing appeals from housing development applicants who were previously denied approval or granted approval with conditions that they feel are unfair. It gives HCD the authority to overturn those decisions if they believe the conditions are not reasonable and are not consistent with local needs. So I would ask for the council's permission to prepare a letter. Apparently, this has passed the Senate on a 21-12 vote. God. It is now moving to the Assembly, and it's imperative that we get a letter to Abel Maldonado stating our opposition to it. Just another opportunity, just another example of state interceding on and trying to wrest control away from local government. So I would ask for your permission on that. Earlier today, I was driving down on a different subject. I was driving down North Oak Park, and I saw these nice bright yellow signs that said, "Beware trucks, wide turning trucks," or something to that effect. I've seen a couple of them. And this sort of gets back to the issue of, I think, what may have been a good idea many years ago to put in this gateway with the palm trees. Is it really accomplishing what it was intended to do? Is it appropriate now? Because this has become a very busy intersection in this city. As I understand, with North Oak Park project ramping up, providing weather cooperates, that there may be some additional funds to look at paving.
Yes and yes.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that that intersection gets a lot of public comment, and if we have a way to open up that intersection, that would be great, and still mark it as a gateway to our community.
So do we want to agendize this?
I think we have consensus.
Okay.
And the other one is you're suggesting that staff prepares a letter to Maldonado with the mayor's signature.
I have a sample letter I'll forward to staff.
I think
staff.
That's great, too.
And sort of just the last thing I had was, if we do go down the road of opening up that intersection, I think there's an opportunity to take some of the trees and put them in strategic locations. I know that there has been a past policy that we want to be, I don't know if we want to be the city of palms, but it's certainly a tree or species of tree that has been accepted in this community. I think several months ago I had asked if the Grover Beautiful Committee could look at an approved list of street trees, because I think we need to have them take a look at that and as part of the beautification of this community, maybe they can come up with a list that might start going in that direction.
I think we did discuss that, John, when we were talking about the changes here on Grand. We talked about the different trees and so forth.
That's all.
Anyone else?
Yeah. I had a discussion with a parks commissioner from Paso, and this is just kind of in passing because I know Steve was kind of instrumental in putting together the kickball. I don't know if we call it tournament or whatever, but a kickball league that we had. And so I'm proposing that Paso's had a real successful wiffle ball tournament. They did it in October, and they're going to come back on February 28th. They're having their second wiffle ball tournament, and it's been a great success. And I guess it's a real success back east. And so they have some particular rules that are specific to Paso. And so I've asked our parks people to kind of look into it and see if it's something we could do here. But it sounds like a really fun. Another thing that could be really fun in our parks department or commission, or parks and recs department. And I also thought home run derby with those big plastic bats would be fun too. Another tournament of that. We used to play that when I was a kid. So anyway, just throw that out. Thank you.
Is that to keep us adults off the streets?
Keep us injured.
I'll second that.
Okay. Anybody else? No. All right. Before we close this meeting, I want to announce that there was no reportable action taken in the closed session of the special meeting earlier this evening. Okay, we are now going to go to...
Can we get 5 minutes in between?
Sure. We'll take 5 minutes before we go into the Improvement Association meeting.
Thanks.
Five. How about 10?
Seven.
Here.
Councilman Lieberman.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem and Vice Chair
Schultz.
Here.
Mayor and Chair Santos.
Here. Public Communications, any member of the public may address the City Council Improvement Agency for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council agency. City Council Improvement Agency will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council agency cannot act on any items not in the agenda. Okay, moving on. 1A1, Improvement Agency Consent Agenda. And 1A2.
Move approval.
Do I have a second?
Actually, I'd like to pull 8-2 just for discussion.
Okay. Do I have a second?
Oh, I'll second the motion to adopt item A1 only.
Okay. Do we need a roll call? Can we just voice vote? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Oppose?
Actually, I thought it was only...
Excuse me? Oh, okay. Okay, Councilmember Lieberman. Oh, Arnoldson.
Can we just have a small staff report to kind of reaffirm what I've read there?
The when the agency adopted a budget this year, it included a position of economic development coordinator. When the council adopted goals back in April of 2003, the number one goal was an aggressive economic development and redevelopment program. What this item would do would be to select the executive director of the agency as the negotiator to be able to negotiate an alternative with regard to how do we staff that. There's a closed session item on this particular agenda where the agency board can consider the alternatives for how to accomplish that, give the negotiator direction, and go forward with negotiations.
Okay, I guess basically what I'm kind of in a quandary because I know that we have had some I don't know how to really put this, but we've actually. Even with you as our manager, we've had some miscommunications within the council as to what we all felt your position is, and we've had several scenarios where we sat down and we actually identified what we think the job title relates to, and I guess that's kind of what I'd like to see this council do before we turn this position over. I'd like to see us identify what we think this position does and give it some parameters. These are the goals A, B, C, D that we expect this position to accomplish in the next six. Identify this on a different agenda.
Right. The item that's before you simply identifies city manager as your negotiator for the process, and this allows him to bring this item into closed session to initiate the negotiating process, which would include, I imagine, the things that you're exactly talking about. So what's before you here is simply an appointment of a negotiator to initiate that type of a process. And how that process moves forward is going to be entirely up to you once you go into closed session.
Councilmember Lieberman.
So I guess an add-on question. I understand Ron's concerns, this is strictly, for lack of a better phrase, a bookkeeping type thing. It doesn't give authorization to begin a negotiation?
To initiate any type of negotiation would be an action that would take place in closed session.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, that's all I really wanted is just to kind of get some clarification, so thank you.
Okay.
Ron, so, I'd thank you for pulling that. When I made a motion to the consent agenda, I didn't want to include that because I had exactly the same questions. Okay. I'm looking for names here. If we're authorizing Mr. Anderson to negotiate with one individual for a position that sounds like it's already settled and all you're negotiating over is the fee,
right,
rather than who it is or what their responsibilities are or what the direction is. So you're okay. Right on track.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I need a motion for that item.
I'll make a motion. We adopt improvement agency number 2.
I'll second that.
Okay, could we have a roll call, please?
Yes.
Mayor
Pro Tem
Vice Chair
Shaws?
Yes.
Councilman Borden Arnson?
Yes.
Councilman Borden Eklund? I'm going to vote no. And the only reason is the wording here, negotiate an agreement with somebody. I don't think we're at that point. So.
Okay, great.
Mayor and Chair Santos?
Yes. Okay, moving on to improvement agency business.
Item A13, Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Project. Proposed adoption of report and plan, adoption of findings relating to the use of the tax increment outside of the project area for housing, and adoption of finding of relating to the use of tax increment outside the project area for housing.
Board, members of the council, what you have before
you... Are you saying we're bored?
You're a board.
Oh.
You are a board. You are not boring by any means. Tonight, what you have is two action items for the improvement agency and one action item by the city council at this joint meeting. And the first action item for your consideration is adoption of a resolution which approves the transmittal of the plan for the Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Project contained in the supplemental report and plan to the City Council. And process is that the City Council began its public hearings of June of 2003 and had continued public hearings up until October 20th of 2003. And at that time, the agency did receive some objections to the boundary of the redevelopment project area. At that time, the City Council directed the city manager and the city attorney to negotiate settlements with those objections, and those objections are reflected within the supplemental report that is being transmitted by the agency to the City Council. With that, we do have in the audience Jack Nagel, which is the from the law office of Goldfarb and Lippman. And we have John Huffman, which is Executive Vice President for Urban Futures, which is the city's consultant for this project. And what, as part of the fiscal impact associated with the project, it is estimated that the tax increment funding earnings over the life of the project would be approximately $35 million. And that would assist in the implementation of the redevelopment plan that is before you at the public hearing process. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to turn it over to either Jack or John for any kind of detailed discussion.
Is there any questions? Okay. Is there anyone in the public that has any questions? Okay. For right now, no. Okay. Then.
Okay, with that, Madam Chair, if you, as the agency may wish to consider the two resolutions listed in your agenda for action, and then the City Council could take action upon that resolution. And if you wish, I could read that for you.
Go for it.
Okay. The first agency resolution would be adopt the agency resolution approving its report to City Council on the proposed improvement plan for the Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Project, which is identified the plan and the project respectively, as supplemental by a supplemental report and transmitting said report as supplemented and the plan to the City Council. That would be your first resolution by the board, the agency. The second resolution by the agency would be making a finding that the use of tax increment earnings derived from the territory proposed to be included within the boundaries of the project, which is the project area, for housing provided outside the project area is a benefit to the project area. Those would be to the two resolutions the agency would act upon tonight.
Is there any questions of staff on this particular?
Any questions on the document?
Okay. The evidentiary document binder. We can get into that under the public hearing.
Okay. So we'll open it up.
Well, you take action on those two resolutions as the agency.
Okay, we'll take action on the first resolution.
The first two resolutions just read.
Okay.
As the agency.
Do you want them doing separate or are you doing them together? Okay. So.
Separate, yes.
Yes.
As supplemented by a supplemental report and transmitting said report and the plan to the City Council.
Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Second.
Oh, excuse me. Motion by Mayor Board Member Scholes and seconded by Board Member Arnoldson. Could we roll call, please?
Yes.
Board Member Arnoldson?
Yes.
Board Member Ekbom?
No.
Board Member Lieberman?
Yes.
Chair Santos?
Yes. Okay. Now I need a motion on the second one.
So moved. Adopt the agency resolution finding the use of tax increment earnings derived from the territory proposed to be included within the boundaries of the project for the housing provided outside the project area is a benefit to the project area.
Second.
Okay. Now, could we have a roll call vote, please?
Yes.
Vice Chair Scholes?
Yes.
Board Member Ekbom?
Yes.
Board Member Lieberman?
Yes.
Chair Santos?
Yes.
Now, the next action would be the action of the City Council adopting a resolution finding that the use of tax increment earnings derived from the project area for housing provided outside the project area is of benefit to the project area. And that is just underneath the other actions just taken.
Steve, where do you have any questions on this? Or?
But we're still not to the evidentiary binder yet.
All right, so moved. I'll move adopt the resolution.
Second.
Okay. Could you have a roll call, please?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekblom?
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes. Okay, City Council Improvement Agency public hearing. Revised project area for Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Redevelopment Plan.
Yes, members of the board and council. The improvement plan, which for the proposed Grover Beach Industrial Enhancement Project, has been prepared pursuant to the California Community Redevelopment Law and Health and Safety Code Section 3000 and all applicable laws and ordinances. The Grover Beach Improvement Agency is proposing the project for the purposes of implementing redevelopment projects and programs designed to accomplish four specific items. The first is upgrade public facilities and infrastructures or a benefit to the territory included the project area, promote and facilitate economic development for job growth within the project area, provide additional housing opportunities, and generally improve the quality of life for residents, business owners, and tenants and property owners located within the limits of the project area. As part of this staff report, you do have a number of attachments You have five attachments. Attachment number one identifies the sequence of hearings and summary discussion of the evidentiary binder. Attachment number two is an agency resolution certifying the final EIR and making findings pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. Attachment number three, and it was continued to up to this meeting, February 2nd. Now, the purpose of the continuance was to negotiate objections received from the county relating to the project area. And what I would like to do is just present to you the primary changes within the project area itself. The original project area consisted of 142 acres. During the public hearing process between the among the agency or between the agency and City Council, letters of objections were received. Based upon that, negotiations occurred, and that's when the supplemental report came back to the agency for your consideration. The modified project area, which is the next slide, eliminated approximately 40 acres. What we have is 109. There we go. We have a moving project area. The purple or blue area is the new project area that is being considered tonight by the agency and City Council, which consists of approximately 109 acres. And that was the primary change within the project. The binder that has been provided to staff and the agency board is what they call the evidentiary binder, which contains all the history and background relating to the process and the hearing, all the necessary documents for the agency to successfully approve the project under consideration tonight. The other important aspect of it is that we want to confirm with the city clerk that no other letters of opposition has been received for this project. And to my knowledge, we have not received. And the city clerk is saying no by the motion of her head, that no additional letters of opposition have been received. Now, as part of the action tonight, again, the five attachments are presented as part of the staff report. And again, the agency would be acting upon two resolutions at the conclusion of your public hearing, if you so desire. And then the City Council would be acting upon one resolution, which would be certifying the EIR. And the last action of the City Council tonight would be the introduction by ordinance, by the title only, for the approving and adoption of the plan. So with that, what we can do is open it up for questions, and we can have some specific dialogue on an evidentiary binder, if you so desire. And we'll be happy to respond to any questions that you may have.
Is there any questions? Go ahead.
Jake, maybe this is just a housekeeping item. We've got this additional staff report. How does the revisions that have been made to the evidentiary binder, are they in the evidentiary binder at this time?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me start then.
Okay. And I'll have John stand up here and answer the questions.
Okay. Displaced people. It looks like there's timelines in which we need, and if it's not on this page, it's somewhere else in the document. There's a timeline in which, from the time we identify a housing unit that we need to plan or build a replacement unit. In some other documents I've read, I honestly can't tell you which ones. There's actually been verbiage where we're going to pay some relocation expenses. Is that alluded to anywhere in here, or are we just saying we need to find alternative housing?
No, there is a section, and there's a section in here that deals extensively with issues of replacement housing and issues of housing. It's called inclusionary housing. Housing where if you act to displace or take a unit off or out of the affordable market, you're obligated to put that unit back in, replace that unit. Whether or not you assist in taking the unit out of that market through some agreement, or whether or not you actually take part in demolishing that particular unit. So in other words, it can be something that's a unit that's completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens with your assistance, you have to participate in providing a replacement unit within a certain guideline as provided on the redevelopment law, that within a period, I believe, Jack, 4 years?
Yeah, so I remember reading 4 years.
And with respect to inclusionary housing, the redevelopment agency, for every 100 units of new housing put up in the project area, regardless of whether the agency participates or not, you're responsible for finding that 15% of those units are affordable. And you have to enter into an agreement that ensures that those units are affordable for 55 years. If you actually build, you, the redevelopment agency, actually build the units, then the number of inclusionary units increases to 30%. That's usually not an issue of any substance unless you have a lot of undeveloped land that is put within the redevelopment project area and a lot of housing units go into place. Then those numbers can be very big. I've worked with a number of clients over the years who have put hundreds of acres of land that's zoned for residential uses. There were no units there, and over time they've had this rather large obligation. If you look at 15% of any units that are put into the project area, or 30% of the units if the agency actually develops those units. So that can be a fairly good-sized burden. And in markets where housing is, well, realizing the whole state of California is somewhat that situation, but there are particular parts of the state of California where there is a very, very high demand. Those redevelopment agencies can actually insist that burden be placed onto the developer and that the developer make those units affordable for the duration of time that they're required to be affordable. And in those communities where the need for housing is not quite so extensive, that burden is the redevelopment agencies to make those units affordable for that period of time. And there is a lesser requirement for units that are rental vis-a-vis those that are ownership occupied. Okay. So, yes, there are extensive requirements.
For the $36 million. I wanted to ask you a question related to this list. Sorry, everyone, but it goes back to page 11. We're talking about infrastructure improvements. And the second paragraph talks about the 20% of the tax increment monies can be used for these public facilities. Is that the housing set aside 20%?
The 20% we're referring to, I believe you're talking about the housing 20%. It would be 20% of the increment collected would be put into your low and moderate income housing fund to be used to provide affordable housing. It depends. The use of that money depends on your local need and how you structure those programs. And you already have programs in place for your existing redevelopment project area. That's the 20% requirement. Now, you can use, if you can find that using that 20% or a portion of that 20% is of benefit to the project area and specifically to your affordable housing obligations, you can use a portion of that money for infrastructure improvement projects in the project area.
Okay.
And specifically to those kinds of guidelines, you may, and before you attempt to use any of that 20% set-aside monies for infrastructure projects, you might want to confer with your special legal counsel about, you know, appropriate ways to do that.
Okay. I'm getting there. Thank you. This page begged the question I asked of Jake. This is tab 3, page E4, and it's line item 1.3. We there?
Yeah, I'm there.
You know, I'm getting a little sleepy. Under agricultural resources, we're making reference to conversion of 24 acres of agricultural land in this statement, but didn't we remove that from the scope?
We did, and you're looking in the environmental impact report.
Yes.
There was a supplement done to the final environmental impact report. The supplement is included in tab 4 4A, which is the supplemental report to council. That supplement is also referenced in the certification resolutions for both the agency and city council. And it makes makes revisions to the final EIR, and it does discuss the fact that agricultural land has been removed from the project area. And we believed, working with your legal counsel, that the supplement contained in the supplemental report to council to the final EIR was appropriate, and that was one of the issues that was discussed in that supplement.
Okay, very good. Last thing. Still, I'm looking in the original EIR on page E14. We're talking about fire protection impacts. Item 1.5.1.
Yes.
Is there the thing that begs attention to this for me is we're addressing fire protection and fire suppression itself. We're not talking about hazardous materials response in an industrial area. Is that covered somewhere else in the EIR?
Hazardous materials?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's in section
2.9. 2.9.
Begins on page 66.
Can you tell I'm not a planner?
2.9. There's proposed budget and the potential impacts. If you could use your crystal ball, is there any way we can quantify the impact that may have on the city? Is it worth us going down this road, forming a second redevelopment area when it looks like this governor, and I don't know how long this is going to be going, is going to be making attacks on trying to get at the monies that are set aside in these agencies. So I'm just curious, has anyone done any numbers or tried to come up with anything that might quantify that for us?
I'll tell you what I know, and I wish I did have a crystal ball because I would be rich, but I don't. So the last two fiscal years, redevelopment agencies have been supplementing the state through their ERAF payments, Education Revenue Augmentation Fund. And it's based, your share, your contribution locally is based on the amount of increment you've generated. And I apologize, I have a list back in the office. I didn't bring that list, which would designate what your payment has been. I'm sure that the city manager can tell you.
It's a little over 13,000.
A little over 13,000. So that was your contributions that in this fiscal year or the last fiscal years?
No, that's the our share of the $135 million proposed additional shift.
Right. Was that so, which fiscal year are you?
The proposed for next year.
Okay. So that's the proposed for this Robert. Next fiscal year. There is no indication whether that ERAF shift will become permanent or it's going to be remain temporary for how many years in the future. We don't know. As long as this budget morass is what it is, redevelopment agencies in the past, you remember in the early 90s, you had ERAF payments. You'll probably continue to have an ERAF payment, again, based on a formula, based on the amount of increment that you're receiving. And as the new redevelopment project area begins to generate increment, that too will be assessed based on the state's formula, depending on how long, again, that remains in place. There is no way to look at the impact other than in that fashion to assume that if 3, 4, 5 years down the road, there is still an ERAF payment mandated to redevelopment agencies, that by that point in time, you will be generating a fair amount of increment. You'll have to pay a portion of that to that ERAF. Other than that, there are no specifics for new redevelopment projects being established, new redevelopment plans being adopted.
Okay. And I guess I think obviously this area does need some redevelopment, and I'm trying to get to the point where I can support this. And so anyone who feels they can contribute, I'm looking for a compelling argument to support this, knowing that the first redevelopment area does not have one project to show. And so now we're talking about forming a second. So I'm still looking for that compelling argument that maybe staff or you can give me or give us. So I know that's pretty broad, but that's kind of where I am. I'm looking for that compelling argument to move forward with this.
Let me take a stab at it first, Ron. I think the most compelling argument is approximately $36 million over a period of 45 years through an increment brought into this redevelopment agency through adoption of this redevelopment project area. Even in its reduced state, you can expect to receive that amount of increment over that period of time realizing some years you're going to get more than the projection that we showed. Some years you get less, but some programs happen. You can expect that the difference between the better parts of your community, those properties, those areas that have higher property values, will begin to level out. And over a period of time, this area has been lagging, but it will catch up. And it's only going to happen if the redevelopment agency can participate in making these kinds of projects and programs happen. And I think one of the best testimonials to make this happen is the fact that the County of San Luis Obispo, while they had a problem with a portion of this, they did not dispute the remainder, the larger part of this redevelopment project area, because they believe that it's a necessary tool for this city to have. Because the County of San Luis Obispo realizes that they're only as strong as the weakest link. And if this part of the city of Grover Beach represents one of those weakest links, they know they need to solidify that weak link. And through redevelopment is one way to help do that. That's the only way I can try to say to you this is project very much of benefit. Maybe, Ron, did you want to add?
Couple of thoughts. One is that the existing redevelopment area is primarily associated with commercial redevelopment and residential redevelopment. This proposed area is primarily targeted towards industrial enhancement. One of the issues that a number of council members have been concerned with is the issue of having workforce housing, of having some relationship of where the jobs are and where folks can afford to live. The combination of these two districts ought to enhance our ability to have the tools to be able to do that. If we are attracting jobs to the area that are head of household kinds of jobs, and if we have the ability to redevelop housing in the existing area, which has a considerable amount of territory that's designated for housing, tax increment that would be generated, and being able to couple the tax increment, the low and moderate income set aside from this particular area towards housing, you have several different objectives that can be accomplished or at least leveraged with this kind of funding. The council said that it wanted to make economic development, an aggressive economic development redevelopment program, its number one goal. And this is one of the tools that would help us leverage that. Now, it's true in the existing area that we have not had any specific leverage that we have applied to the money or by using the money that we have borrowed. By the same token, we have leveraged a project that is going to go a long way towards strengthening the identity of downtown in Grover Beach. And I think it's going to be a catalytic kind of project that is going to have a halo effect to that. We've had a number of projects that have come about with little or no help from the redevelopment agency that I think are signature kinds of projects. The Beach Place project, the Technical Center project are two projects that folks are going to be able to say, you know, I never really thought.
You wouldn't see those many active redevelopment agencies. You wouldn't see that number of redevelopment project areas. And this community never would have embarked on that if they didn't believe that at that point in time it was certainly a worthwhile exercise. As far as I know, you've talked about being more aggressive in your economic development programs and certainly redevelopment because of the funding that it brings to the table. And the studies that you've participated in up to this point in time to identify those properties that are in the most dire need of assistance, it begs the question, if you don't have redevelopment to help handle those kinds of issues, infrastructure, affordable housing, economic development, public facilities, where are you going to get them? And the county and the other affected taxing entities have stepped up to the plate and said, we're going to contribute portions of our tax dollars to the city of Grover Beach through this project to help make those improvements. And what kinds of improvements are we talking about? Again, I think Councilman Lieberman brought up the projects list. And at this point in time, this is a general list of projects that you would look to do in the project area. It's not specific because we don't want to tie your hands at some near term. We don't want to tie our future agency board city council hands in the future. So with respect to the needs of the community in the future, they'll look at this projects list and say, well, street improvements at such and such and such and such. It's in the project area. It's in the projects list. We have this amount of money to implement that improvement at that point in your project area. It's 10 years from now. Let's do it. That's how this list would be used.
John, can I jump in?
Sure.
On your interest in being sold on the redevelopment agency, I wanted to chime in because I've begrudgingly have gone along with this, and I've worried about the same thing. First of all, the ramifications and the visibility from our community as to, you guys already have one, you haven't done anything with it. And the second is, I think I left before we went to a vote on taking the next step last time was, are we all basically saying that we want to finance a sewer for this part of town? And everyone kind of said, yeah. Which begs the question to me, and it's the old, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg, is business attraction. You know, do we build the sewer knowing that we need it in this part of town and then hope that we're going to land that big person that's going to come in with their capital and make the investment? Or do we find that person and then say, well, for them to come here, we need to put a sewer in? So I'm still torn on what we're doing, and if we do go forward with this, I would say short term we need to find a way to get that sewer in there. Otherwise, we're going to be sitting in a blighted area and collecting increment over a 40-year period and not having anything to show with it. Because I don't think it's realistic for any of us to assume we're going to have a major player come into this part of town without a sewer. And that's my big thing that I'm still hung up on.
Staff, has anyone shown any interest in this area? Has there been any nibbles that you know of?
Well, obviously, Hunter Coast Printing has moved into the area. The Grover Beach Industrial Park, or whatever Warren Sanders project, is under construction in the area. Some of the efforts that we have been making more aggressively with regard to economic development are resulting in contacts where there are opportunities that are the folks that are in between either the retail outlet or the industrial or manufacturing kind of firm that are scouting locations and scouting properties. And for us to be in a position to move and be competitive, we're able to react quickly. That's the thing I think that's going to make the difference on somebody deciding whether to locate here or whether to locate somewhere else. And this would just be one of those tools.
I had a chance this afternoon to talk with Suzanne Bragnan, and she was updating me on the brochure she's making. It was very impressive, and the last conference she went to, some of the nibbles that she was getting there.
Madam Chair, you know, over the next period of months, the next period of years, you'll have ample time to work with your staff in putting together and prioritizing projects, programs, and you know what you want to do to help business locate here, or help existing businesses to grow. But the important thing is, over that period of time, you're beginning to accrue additional dollars to help implement whatever projects and programs you decide you want to implement and how you're going to prioritize the implementation of those projects and programs. But if you don't have the dollars to make that happen, whether it's a new sewer, new water lines, storefront upgrades, roadway improvements, whatever it might be, if you don't have the money to fund those things, you could have all the good intentions of the world and nothing's going to happen. So what this gives you is something to help build your future in this community generally, and most specifically in this project area.
In respect to the sewer, you can refresh my memory, but it seems that we had asked an independent company to kind of start getting us a plan to determine how to accomplish the sewer project. And I don't know where we're at on that. Is there any way we can have an agenda item that brings that back and kind of gives us an idea of? I think that Bob Mack was going to – that was my last recommendation that he was going to try and give us some ideas of how to accomplish that. And I know that's a real concern for all of us. I mean,
That's entirely correct. The timing of that was designed to take advantage of the creation of this district and to be funded from this district. That was the original plan. District hasn't been formed yet, and so that's why we've held off on that particular project. Mm-hmm. There is some sewer capacity in the project area because of the lift station that Warren Sanders has put in there, and some folks have connected to that. And so there are some shorter-term solutions that are possible that are lower cost, and we already have an agreement and a basis for being able to accomplish that. But I think the original plan was to be able to use the district to do the kind of study to figure out a comprehensive system that makes sense and that is sized properly, and to accomplish that with tax increments so that it is
connection. And the boggling thing was the business owner said, we just do the cheapest scenario. We're not interested in connecting. Mm-hmm. If the city makes this investment decision, can we force business people to connect?
I think that in a way we can, because what we're trying to do is protect groundwater. If there is the alternative available, then I think that we can require them to do that.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Well, and as long as we are talking about that whole scenario, I think that if we don't move soon, I think the lift station that we have in place is a total mistake. It was a mistake from the get-go. And it wasn't designed that way. Our sewers were designed to be in that area, were designed to be gravity flow. Some staff person made a decision to put a lift station in there, which is the improper thing to do. It we've already rebuilt it once. It's going to continue to be rebuilt. We need to do something right from here on out. And this is maybe, hopefully, an instrument to do that.
Okay.
And the more people that connect to that, the bigger problem we're going to have in the end. So,
board member Ekbaum.
I had just a different question. Are we through with sewers? Okay, John, are you through, or are you?
Well, why don't you go ahead? I got two more, but why don't you go ahead? Okay, I'll finish.
Okay.
On page 32 of Exhibit A of Attachment 2,
what?
On the staff report. John, what page was that?
32.
Okay.
Yes.
The last page of Exhibit A?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was kind of struck by the way this paragraph was worded. What it's saying is that, you know, for instance, if this is talking about the reduced project and eliminating the area south of Highland, and it goes on to say that, for instance, the agency will not have the financial or legal tools to induce private development to occur in an environmentally sensitive manner or in a manner that will eliminate any current adverse physical and economic conditions, da 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 da. I don't know if I agree with that in total. I understand what your intent was, and if there's a way that we can kind of massage this wording, because I think one of the things that we talked about when we deleted that area was that there were certainly some legal tools available to the city to induce development and to make sure that it is environmentally sensitive and it addresses all of the land use issues when it comes forward.
Yeah, and those tools would still be there. I think what we're saying in this particular section of this document is that because they're not in the redevelopment project area, the agency itself, through its funding mechanism and its administrative assistance, would not be a party to those kinds of considerations. Okay. That's all we're saying, because now they're deleted. Before, when they were a part of the project area.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's also important to see the last sentence in
if there is a residence in the middle of an area that we're trying to cause redevelopment of.
Yeah, that was the provision that you adopted I don't know the date that the redevelopment agency adopted their eminent domain provisions. That is included in the redevelopment plan. So, no, there would have been certain procedures that you would have had to have followed as a part of this adoption process had you included the authority to take residential properties on which any person resides. So it doesn't necessarily have to be zoned residential. Okay. It doesn't even have to be someone living on that property legally. That if there is somebody living there, they might be squatting. If you take that property through eminent domain, you're in violation of the authority of your plan. So, no, you are prohibited. You've included that in your plan as it's written, assuming you adopt that plan tonight, that you will not take properties in which any person is reside. Now, if you wanted to change that, I would have to defer to legal counsel as to what you would do, because if you had had that authority in this plan, you would have had a project area committee formed in order to use that within this project area, because you know, the people that live there fall within moderate to low incomes, and I think a case could have been made that there were a substantial number of residents within this project area, even though substantial is not defined. The fact is, I've worked with attorneys, if you have two or three families living in a project area, you could say, somebody could make a finding, an argument, that that is a substantial number. Therefore, you needed to have a project area committee in place if you're going to include that authority to take those residences in your plan.
Okay, I'm not going to go any further with that.
No more questions?
Well, I do, but I'm going to let Dave have some time. I'm just
deep time. You're going to mellow out.
I'm molding it over.
Okay.
I just had one, and it's the $35 million in tax increment over 45 years. Is that in today's dollars, or is that in...
That's in today's dollars.
Okay. Today's dollars, if it, money doubles every 10 years with some kind of interest, that means that that actually will be $120 million in 40 years.
Well, exactly. I mean, we didn't look at the consumer price index. Those kinds of things. No, these are
I was just afraid it was going to be the opposite. We're doing something that's going to get us $5 million in today's dollars. But it's $35 million in today's dollars.
Right. But just also remember that the cost of doing your projects over time is going to increase, so everything will still be consistent.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, John, did you want to go
ahead?
No,
I'm done. Thank you very much. I appreciate the responses from Mr. Anderson and I forgot your name. But.
Huffman. John D.
Well, I knew the first name, but you know, I said Mr. Anderson, and I couldn't get roll to the. You know.
Pretty appropriate name when you're talking about sewers. I don't think you want to do that. What do we do when we get there? That's the other part of that.
So if you have,
I just want to make kind of a little statement or something. I'm not against redevelopment, but we're doing a redevelopment project now, just like every other redevelopment project in the state, and we're going to have the same results as all of them, and it's not going to address low-income housing. And we gave away a wonderful opportunity for us to do something unique and a little bit out of the box, but at least it would try and address the problem that no one else is addressing, and that's a substantial amount of affordable housing. So I'm going to vote against this project, and it's because of the reduction in size. It's not because I don't believe that redevelopment is the proper thing to do down there. So that's all.
Okay. And anybody down here? Any more questions to staff?
Seeing no questions from staff, what I would like to do is summarize is the agency has two resolutions for consideration tonight. The first resolution would be to adopt the agency resolution certifying the final EIR and making findings pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. The second agency resolution would be just adopting or approving the plan that has been presented to you. And the City Council, in terms of its action, you have one resolution, which would be, again, certifying the final EIR and making findings pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. Then the second action of the City Council, so if you choose to decide to go in this direction, would be conduct the first reading by title only of the ordinance approving and adopting the plan. And next City Council meeting and the agency meeting, I would bring it back for a second reading and adoption. That's in page 2 of your staff report at the bottom.
Okay. Well, let me. I'm going to try something so we can move this forward. When I had talked about a compelling argument earlier, I believe that staff and John, I think, made some very compelling arguments that have that have caused me to look at this in a different light. I think the distinction between the first area being more commercial and this being more industrial is a significant enough difference that it would justify moving toward a second. The aggressive economic development is also another one. And the $35 million in tax increment doesn't hurt. So with that said, I'd like to support the project. So I'm going to try and make a motion here. And so I move that the agency certify the final EIR and make findings pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act, or we adopt a resolution doing that.
Okay. Is there a second?
It's pretty messy, but I think you guys understand where I'm heading.
Second.
Okay. Could we have a roll call in this place?
Yeah, I'm a little just going to set the ball in motion, and it may be a while before that ball actually goes through some kind of a goal, but it is a worthwhile thing in the long run. So I just wanted to put that 2 cents in there.
Thank you.
If I could chime in as well, because I've been pretty skeptical of this process as well, for those very same reasons. I think the argument that City Manager gave this evening regarding the balance between commercial and industrial was probably what pushed me over. Obviously, I'm very concerned about hanging our hat on a project. I'm always whining about it, and hopefully this will give us a secondary playing field to do something like that. So I'm going to support the project as well.
You're playing ball again, huh?
Yeah, with a limp. Good. Noticeable limp.
Okay. Call for the question. We have a roll call, please.
Vice Chair Scholes?
Yes.
Board Member Arnolson?
Yes.
Board Member Ekbaum?
No.
Board Member Lieberman?
Yes.
Chair Santos?
Yes.
I move that that we adopt agency resolution approving the plan.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Vice Chair Scholes?
Yes.
Board Member Lieberman?
Yes.
Board Member Arnolson?
Yes.
Board Member Ekbaum?
No.
Chair Santos?
Yes.
Okay.
I move that the City Council adopt the resolution certifying the final EIR and making findings pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnolson?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekbaum?
No.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
And finally, I would move that Council conduct first reading by title only of an ordinance approving and adopting the plan and schedule a second reading and adoption for the meeting of February 17, 2004.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem Scholes?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Ekbaum?
No.
Councilmember Lieberman?
Yes.
Mayor Santos?
Yes.
And before we leave, I was going to say something earlier, and I think Councilmember Ekbaum, I appreciate and applaud your efforts to be creative. I think it was a good idea. That night when we considered eliminating the area south of Highland, the owner of that property, the property in question, showed up at the meeting. He didn't speak, and I, by chance, ran into him several weeks later and asked him exactly what his concerns were. And he was extremely upset that the city would consider planning something out on his property without even consulting him. So, you know, while I applaud the effort, I think there has to be a balance in how we go about doing things, and that's just how I feel on that. But I understand how you feel on this.
Okay. Yes, we're going to go into closed session. Is the intention of the approving agency to meet in closed session concerning the following item, conference with labor negotiator pursuant to government code section 54957.6. Agency negotiator, executive director, unrepresented employee, economic development coordinator.
You want to